This is KERA News. I'm Rick Holter. Brian Williams had it made. He was a trauma surgeon at the biggest hospital in Dallas. Then came July 7th, 2016. He treated and lost three of the officers who were gunned down that night. At a press conference a few days later, Dr. Williams spoke for a city when he said that night was the turning point of his life.
And I think about it every day. That I was unable to save those cops when they came here that night. It weighs on my mind constantly. This killing, it has to stop.
A little more than a year later, Brian Williams' life reached another turning point. This summer, he quit his job without another one lined up. Brian Williams, welcome to the Friday Conversation.
Thank you for having me.
The big question, I guess, is why quit?
For me, I always felt that there was a lot more facets to my identity as a medical professional beyond my role as a trauma surgeon. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was, you know, fashion a career where I could focus on the reasons I got into medicine in the first place, which was I was interested in having a career that was focused on social justice, which to me meant I could treat patients that had limited or no access to health care.
Now, you treated gunshot victims before. You treated cops before. What was it about that night last summer that made it such a turning point for you?
This particular night, when you have the peaceful protest in downtown Dallas, which is protesting police brutality, you have a black sniper who is targeting white police officers, and then, you know, seven come to our hospital, three are fatally wounded. And then there's me personally. I was the only black trauma surgeon in that group of 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm working this night when this happens. This was preceded by the death of Philando Castile in Minnesota the day prior.
Right.
And Alton
right.
Sterling the day prior to that. So I was already thinking about these larger societal issues of race and violence. And then they all intersected that night unexpectedly with my professional life. And after that, it was impossible for me to ignore how deeply impacted I was by all of this that was happening.
And you've had some personal experiences, too, with police officers outside the ER.
One of the most recent occurred here in Dallas, where I was standing outside of my apartment complex and Dallas police came up to me, essentially questioned me, and they were cordial and professional. And this is not a story about police brutality. Mm-hmm. It's a story about me as a black man fearing for my safety when police approached me. And that happened because someone saw me and thought I looked suspicious. So they called it in, and therefore the police responded. I've been pulled over in the past. I felt they went beyond what was necessary to get their answers for why I was ran a red light or speeding. Minor infractions, but I felt the response exceeded what was necessary in that situation. Mm-hmm. The reality is you never know if it's just them doing their job or is mm-hmm. it because, you know, right. I'm treated this way because I'm black. And it's a question that, you know, minorities are always wrestling with in these types of situations.
Now, the press conference, which I think was 4 days after the shooting, went viral. You were on just about every network in the days afterward. What's it like playing out a personal struggle on such a public stage?
I was completely unprepared for the response. I'll tell you, I'm someone that's very rigorously protected my privacy mm-hmm. and avoided media requests and the spotlight. And when that happened, that was beyond anything I'd expected. I felt what I did was I maintained my authenticity about how I felt, describing my duality as a black man in this country who respects, you know, law enforcement, decries violence against law enforcement, but also has an inherent fear of law enforcement, and also being a black professional navigating two worlds when it comes to my job at work and also the inherent challenges of being a black professional when you're in the minority in that situation.
Do you feel, you know, more than a year later, a year and 3 months later, have you come to some peace about that duality?
I've come to peace with my ability to acknowledge it mm-hmm. and speak openly about the challenges of that duality. I mean, when you're a black professional, you don't move your career forward by being outspoken about the challenges of being a black professional.
Right.
So even though it's not always explicit, you understand that to get by, you just avoid those controversial types of discussions.
Since the shooting, you've been talking a lot about the intersection of race and violence and medicine. As an African-American doctor, how have you seen that play out in the medical field?
There are a dearth of African-American physicians and particularly black males in medicine. So when I went into medical school, I recognized that I was in the minority, but it was nothing unusual. You just know that that's the way life is going to be as right. you move through your professional ranks. What I did not anticipate was overt and, you know, covert challenge that I would encounter in medicine. I've been called racial slurs by patients. I've had patients request to have another doctor. They don't want to have a black doctor, so they request another doctor. I've been with my colleagues, and we're being introduced, and everybody gets introduced by Dr. X, Dr. Y, Dr. Z, and then they'll get to me, and they say, and this is Brian. So those are things that you just kind of silently endure to get by, but there's also many positive incidences I can describe where you encounter patients who will tell you that you're the first black doctor they've had in their entire lives, and you can just see their faces light up and the smiles, and somehow whatever they came to see you for is irrelevant. they've had a black doctor, and that just makes their day. And that's a sense of pride, a source of pride for me, and also makes me realize that I represent something bigger than myself to a lot of people, and I don't take that lightly.
Since last summer, it's not like our culture's struggle about race has eased. I mean, there was the election, there was Charlottesville, even as recently as the protests in St. Louis in the last few days. Why is this such a difficult conversation to have? Do you think white people are afraid to talk about race?
I think a lot of people are afraid to talk about race, and I would not just categorically dismiss white people as a whole. But I think we should just talk about it in terms of black and white, because that is the dynamic that is the most divisive in this country. And that is the one that really has not been addressed. And I think we just all need to acknowledge that in America, we live in a racialized society. That does not mean that everyone has racist intent. And if we can separate those two ideas, then we can move the conversation forward. Because there is a lot of work to do on so many levels to bring some equity for everyone in this country. When I say equity, I just mean fairness, so everyone has an opportunity to succeed. I'm not talking about making things equal across the board. Just people want to know that they have a fair shot to achieve the American dream. And right now, with everything being seen through the prism of race, that certainly is not possible.
Mm-hmm. What do you think when you see the public openness of racial hatred, of white supremacy? I mean, 5, 6 years ago, 10 years ago even, we wouldn't have heard this.
Personally, I'm not surprised. Now that it's getting so much public play, I really feel that this is an opportunity for those that were on the sidelines about this issue to see how destructive this can be. There are a lot of people out there that probably did not have the courage to speak up before that are now finding the courage to do so. So as ugly as that element is to me, I think that its visibility is an opportunity for us to move society in the right direction towards more equality.
This isn't your first career reinvention. You were in the Air Force for 13 years, an aeronautical engineer. You left for medical school, became a trauma surgeon, kind of at a point that a lot of people would say that's mid-career.
Right.
What's next?
I'm still in a transition phase right now. What I do know is that what I do next will encompass having a career that is focused on social justice. I mean, the important point I want to really make is that I did not quit medicine. I will still be in medicine. I left my former position, but not the career of medicine. So it will involve that, but it will maximize other facets of my medical training and experiences beyond my role in the OR, which was, you know, cutting and sewing. So everything I've done up to this point, I think what is important and in preparation for the next phase. And I know that this is the right move and things are going to turn out okay.
Well, Brian Williams, good luck with that next chapter, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.